what it's all about. Could I welcome Mary Raymond and Nigel Clark? Good evening, the two of you.
Good evening, Graham. It's good very evening, nice Graham. To be here.
Yes, it's great to be here.
I'm glad you are here. I'd be a bit lonely if you weren't. So, tell us a bit about yourselves. Who are you? Where do you come from?
So, ladies first, I'm guessing. So, my name is Mary Raymond and I come from Kent and I'm based in Maidstone and I am a solicitor, but I'm also a mediator, and mediation is my first passion.
Nigel.
And yes, I'm a solicitor, arbitrator, mediator based in Kent, Sussex and Surrey, and have been for the last 30 odd years, which
you,
is hard to believe.
You don't look old enough.
Thank you, Grant. That's very kind of...
You're welcome. Well, OK, mediation. Now, people have said to me before, isn't mediation when you sit in a room and go,
Sometimes.
Hopefully not.
Oh, I take it that's wrong then. So tell us, what is mediation?
So essentially, mediation is a process that's there for people who are at the point of separating or maybe getting divorced. And the idea is you sit down together with a professionally trained mediator to help sort out arrangements for the future, where people are going to live, what time the children are going to spend with each of their parents, and sorting out the financial arrangements that go with that.
So how do people access it? Is it about helping them get back together?
No, it's not really, although it can happen that people will end up getting back together. But in the vast majority of situations, it's about people who've decided they want to approach a separation in a more modern way, not the old-fashioned, traditional slagging matches in court and acrimony. The modern way is to try and sit down with someone professional who is a professional mediator who's going to help them talk the situation through and have a more grown-up, more modern, more adult separation.
So who's mediation actually aimed at? Is it limited to the family sphere?
Well, Mary and I are both family mediators. There are actually quite a few different types of mediation. So if we're really here to talk about the family model. And I think we both believe that really any sort of family dispute has the potential to be sorted out in mediation. It's a very good process for many couples. It's not an easy process, but I think we would both say it's a good process and also very cost effective.
Yeah, but there is the other alternative of neighbour disputes and other contract disputes and other types of disputes that can be dealt with by mediation. But we generally do family mediation, which can be grandparents, parents, businesses, family businesses. So it covers a very wide ranging area.
Well, you're listening to On the Air with Graham Jones on BBC Radio Kent. Have you experienced mediation? Have you been through the process? You can hear Nigel and Mary talking about how it works. If you've been through, how did you find it? Do you think the process worked for you? Give me a call on 0800 756 1111 if you'd like to share your story with us. Alternatively, text me on 81333, starting with the word Kent. So mediation. It's now, I understand there's sort of a requirement that you must look at it. How does that work?
Well, so essentially nowadays, before you start any form of court process, you do need to attend what's called a mediation information and assessment meeting.
Is there an acronym for that?
Sometimes called a MIAM.
MIAM.
We do love our acronyms. So you would go along and talk to a mediator, and the mediator would then assess whether your particular case is suitable for mediation, which is not always the case. But you need to attend that meeting for most cases before you can start any form of court process, apart from straightforward divorce.
So Mary, does that mean you have to mediate before you can go to court?
No, Graham, you don't have to mediate. You just have to be assessed to make sure that you understand all the different processes that are available as an alternative to court. Sometimes, as Nigel said, court's not avoidable. But the important thing is that members of the public, people who are separating, families, have all the information they need to choose the right process for them.
So we think court's the last resort. Is that probably a good way of putting it?
it should be. I mean, I think sometimes we probably feel it seems to be the first port of call for some people. They want to go to court and have their day in court.
Why do you think that is? Do you think people don't understand about mediation, don't understand the alternatives that are available?
I think there's a lot of misunderstanding out there, and I think the more we can talk about the process and explain it to people, even the people we see, I think often come with the misunderstandings, and then they sit down with you and explain how it works, and hopefully think, oh, okay, I didn't realise that, and that sounds might be quite helpful to me.
And so people think they're going to get their day in court, but often they end up in a very stuffy, dirty, grotty place where there's lots and lots and lots of people. They can't make themselves heard. They wait for hours. It's very expensive. And then they go before a judge who's probably really hungry and a little bit grumpy himself.
I know a lot of grumpy judges.
And don't feel that they've got what they thought they would get in terms of justice. And the mediation process lets people keep control of their situation and make their own choices and their own decisions.
I'd be interested to hear from you. Give me a call on 0800 756 1111. Have you been to a solicitor and been through the divorce process? Did your solicitor explain to you about mediation? Were you given the option? Well, I suppose one of the problems is if the solicitors or the legal advisors aren't selling it to the clients, they're not going to know about it.
I think it's about working collaboratively. And I know there's something Kirsty was talking about last week. What we have to do is work in a way that's best for the clients. And sometimes that will be mediation. Sometimes it will be the collaborative process. And sometimes it will be going to court. And it's finding the right way. I think Mary and I probably both feel that lots of cases end up in court, which simply shouldn't be there. Mm. It could have been resolved before you get to that point.
I mean, separation is a very emotional and difficult time. I mean, if you're going through a separation at the moment and have any concerns that you'd like us to deal with, please give me a call on 0800 756 1111. We can promise anonymity if you wish, and you could get some guidance from some very experienced mediators here tonight. So, if we're going into mediation, what's the process? What can clients expect?
So the first thing that we'll do is have a chat with you on the phone and check that you understand the main elements of the process, which is one, it's voluntary. It's completely voluntary. You do not have to do it. And secondly, a very important part of it is that it's a confidential process. So not just no posting on social media and on a Facebook page about what's happened, but not telling a court about what happened. If you do end up in court, it's the process where you want to be transparent. You want to feel you can say what you need to say without it being thrown back in your face if you ever did end up in court. So it's a confidential process.
So with that confidentiality, what happens about people discussing things in mediation? Can they go back to their sister and say, well, I want to go to court now, and they said this in mediation, I want to use that against him?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. And what clients can do is take away from mediation and talk to their lawyer to get some advice, which is an important part of the process and complements the mediation. Mediators can't give advice. Therefore, clients sometimes need to go to lawyers to get the advice before they come back to the next mediation session. And that's absolutely fine.
We feel as mediators that we need to be even-handed between both people so that they don't feel that we're biased towards one person or the other.
So what do you say to clients then? So if you can't give them advice and they have to go to see their solicitor, do you get a situation where they come back and their solicitor's trying to talk them out of the mediation?
That can happen. I mean, I think generally I'm an optimist, and I think there are lots of collaborative lawyers out there who actually want, when their clients are in mediation, they do want to be supportive of the process. It doesn't always happen. Sometimes you will get misunderstandings, but I think essentially I do firmly believe that all family professionals are trying to do the best for their clients, working together. And that may be mediation, it may not be.
So yeah, people have to be in the right place, I think, Nigel. Yeah. You would agree that if you are still feeling extremely raw, extremely emotional, extremely upset, that's probably not the best moment to be coming into mediation, because you do need to focus and you do need to be able to concentrate on either arrangements or figures. And so you will need the support of a lawyer, probably.
Yeah. And it's conflicting price. I mean, people come to you when they're in conflict, and that can be very difficult. It's not an easy option. But with the right support, I think people find actually it can work very well for them.
So how do you see them? Do you see them individually or together, or what's the start of the process?
So at the start, we will see each person individually to check they understand the elements that I was saying, the confidentiality, the fact that it's voluntary, and that they're okay sitting in their room together and so forth. At that meeting, we check through the paperwork, make sure they've got all the information they need to bring, and then we organise a joint meeting. So generally speaking, people will sit in the same room together with myself or Nigel, experienced mediator, and the three of us will try to establish an agenda and identify what needs to be sorted out, look at options, develop options, try and be realistic, and just support the process of...
Can you keep secrets? What happens if you're told something that they say, we don't want you to tell the other party?
Oh, Nigel's shaking his head at this stage.
So I think it is important that you generally see the client separately for the first meeting, because people need to share with you what their worries and concerns and problems are. If mediation then doesn't go ahead, then that's fine. But if mediation starts, generally speaking, everything has to be shared in mediation. And that's something you would discuss with the clients before that first joint meeting to make that clear. Okay. That's understood.
Well, thank you. You're listening to On the Air with Graham Jones on BBC Radio Kent. And now the weather with Jane Bartram.
Overnight tonight, we have a cold front moving through, and that's going to bring some cooler air as we head into Thursday.
The question's very simple. What is it illegal to wear in the Houses of Parliament? What is it illegal to wear in the Houses of Parliament? So, Mary, Nigel, what do you think on that one? Any ideas? If you don't know, don't say it. It'll spoil it for the listeners.
Yeah, I think I'll think on that one.
I've got some ideas. I'm going to keep them to myself.
So, well, tonight we're talking about mediation. By all means, please give me a call if you have a story about mediation or if you have a question. We can guarantee your anonymity if you don't want us to identify you on air. That's not a problem. So, before the travel, we were talking about the mediation process. So we've had the initial meeting, you found out what's going on. Both clients have agreed to come to mediation. They're not going to go to court at that stage. What happens from there?
So then you would have your first joint meeting with everyone sitting in the same room. You'd set an agenda to find out what they really do want to talk about. It's their process. They make the decisions and they decide what you're there to talk about. And try to just plan ahead with them in terms of talking about the children, if that's what they want to talk about, finances, whatever else may be a worry to them. And then probably over the course of the next 3 to 4 meetings, that's probably a fairly typical mediation length of time, you would hope you find resolution to all those difficulties and problems. And you can help the clients by giving them information about what the law says, what the courts can do, but not giving advice.
So some couples can be fairly acrimonious at this stage. I mean, do they have to be in the same room? What can you do about that?
They don't have to be in the same room. It's effective if they are in the same room, because then they can see body language and tone of voice. But if they don't feel they can be in the same room, and that's something you assess right at the outset, then you can be in separate rooms, and that tends to be described as shuttle, because the mediator is shuttling between the two. So you would generally have a room quite a long way away, but in the same building, so that you could walk between the two rooms, and you wouldn't really have any joint meeting if people are in separate rooms, unless they want to.
I think it's relatively, shuttle's a relatively rare process. I mean, I think actually once you've sat down and the clients have met you and you've talked through the process, most clients actually are willing to try and sit down together in the same room.
Yeah, so some people will start off separately, I think, Nigel, and then maybe come together.
Yeah, and even in quite very emotional, difficult cases. And sometimes it's easier to do that and have a discussion with the mediator present, someone who's not taking sides, not positional, not representing either of them, but actually there to help both of them.
Oh, interesting. We've had a text come in. There was a question. Can mediation save me money in my divorce? Probably a quite important question, because this all can be an expensive process, can't it?
So I think probably the short answer from the statistical point of view and the research that the government's done is yes.
So is that because you're cheap, or is that because people sort it out quicker?
Well, one of the things that I generally say to people is when you're going between lawyers, you go in, you see your lawyer sends a letter usually or makes a phone call to the other lawyer then has to contact the other party has to give. You can see it's quite a lengthy process. If you're in the same room together, you can cut through a lot of issues and a lot of things that you didn't think would be particularly important, but can take a lot of correspondence. And so you make progress quite quickly in those circumstances.
I can understand that, I suppose, because you've got everybody in the same room. Yeah. What happens if a client says, I want to bring my new partner in, I want to bring my solicitor in, I want to bring a family member in for support? How do you deal with that?
Solicitors certainly can come into the mediation process. In fact, I was doing one on Monday with a mediation that's run on a little while. And this is sort of fourth session. It's getting a little bit difficult. And I felt the solicitors coming to the process would really help get to the sort of finishing line, if you like. And that was achieved. So that can be done. Generally, other people wouldn't come into the process. But it can be done with everyone's agreement. And I've certainly had cases where another family member has been present for each of the clients. But everyone has to agree that.
We try and tailor the process to what people want. And if there's someone else who's significant, particularly when you're talking about children arrangements, there may be somebody else who's very involved in the children arrangements, then they might be important to bring in. But you would always start off with the two central people. And then you would discuss bringing somebody else in.
I'm assuming you agree an agenda. So can you come into mediation and talk about your separation? So what you want to do about the divorce, finances, children? Yeah. How do you plan the process?
It needs to move forward. So what you're not there to do is talk about past difficulties that the clients have had. Generally speaking, they do want to share some of those difficulties, and they'll sit there a little while and actually maybe sometimes have a bit of a go at each other. And I think to enable them to move forward, you have to let them do that. But then it does need a momentum, and that you do need to move them forwards about thinking about the future. You know, where are you going to live? What's going to happen to the house? What are the arrangements going to be for the children? How are you going to manage your finances? All sort of fairly key questions. Mm-hmm. So you need to focus the clients to give it a purpose. And I think most clients understand that, and because that's why they're there. They want to sort out these problems.
So either of you can answer this question. Have you ever had a really difficult mediation?
Yes, I think we both have, to be fair. Most mediations are quite intense. The worst mediations are when somebody leaves, or in my case, tries to leave, because I've got the key to the building. And so I usually have to say to people,
they're not allowed out until they've settled.
I have to say, if you leave, you have to ask me to let you out, which is quite a good way to start. So I think every mediator has difficult situations where you regret bringing the jug of water into the room because someone looks like they're about to pick it up and throw it over the other person.
I did lose a mediation clerk once, and I don't know where they'd gone to. In fact, they'd gone out for a cigarette break, but they didn't tell me that. So the moment passed quite quickly.
I had someone who went out, and I was busy texting them saying, "Where are you?" And yes, that can be quite a difficult situation when you don't know where the client's gone. Everyone needs to take a break. It's quite an intense situation being in a room, the three of you. And so we do plan for regular breaks.
And I think it's important to remember that clients generally are in a difficult time in their lives. So in fact, yes, mediation is quite difficult, but of course it will be. But actually, I think both our experience is that when people are able to come to the process and it's suitable, more often than not, it does work.
So, well, that's sort of my next question. But so does mediation work for everyone?
It doesn't work for everyone, but I'd say the percentage of success is very high. I mean, they do break down. And sometimes a mediator, you have to stop the process because you just think that you're going round and round in circles. You're not moving forwards. Or if one client is using it as an opportunity just to criticise their spouse or their partner, it's not appropriate to let that continue. You do have to manage the process very carefully.
That's right. But you don't always know when it's been successful. So I had a lady email me earlier in the week saying, thank you so much for helping us. We resolved everything. But I didn't know that because the mediation had taken place 2 years ago. And actually, at the end of our meeting, we'd resolved most points, but not everything. And it seemed that what had happened was we'd had a meeting, lots of progress. And then after the meeting, everything had been resolved. So sometimes we don't know how successful it is.
That's interesting. So can you tell, do you see people change as the process goes on? So you can get people in that are clearly sort of very reluctant to be there, and then they move their position during the process.
Yes. So, I mean, I'm sure Mary and I have both had mediations where they might have told you we've not spoken to each other for months. I mean, I had quite a recent one. And the first meeting, actually, they are talking together. They may not be agreeing on much. And I think you then have to let them have that conversation because, you know, you're thinking, well, you've told me you've not been communicating. At least you are communicating. But then I think as the process evolves, I think people generally do find that things do get easier. And I think part of that comes from resolving uncertainty because people don't know what the future holds in store for them. And once they have a clearer picture about the future and think, actually, maybe things are going to be okay, then I think things begin to calm down and people feel less stressed. And so, that's a huge benefit of the process.
So when you're going into the process, I mean, how many meetings are we talking about having? Does it vary whether it's children or finance?
So often it will be between 3 and 4, but it can be more. It can be less. It really depends the stage that you've reached in your situation. And we try and assess that. And going back to your listener's text as to the cost, some people will come to me and they've got all their financial information. They've got a clear idea about what their proposals are. They've been trying to negotiate a bit. And that might just be one or two meetings because actually they are quite a long way down the line. But if they're right at the beginning of the process, it will take longer.
Well, you're listening to On the Air with Graham Jones on BBC Radio Kent. Thank you for tuning in tonight. We're talking to Mary Raymond and Nigel Clark, who are mediators, and we will shortly be joined by Jonathan Miller, who's chair of Kent Resolution, but after No Doubt. Well, come on, guests. I'll say hello to Jonathan, who's now joined us. Good evening, Jonathan.
Good evening, Graham. Thank you for having me
so,
on.
So, any ideas? What shouldn't you wear in the Houses of Parliament?
Clown shoes.
Cycling helmet.
So, that, well, you could have that when you come in and then just forget to take it off.
Look close to that lycra. Anything.
No, well, you shouldn't really wear lycra anywhere, should you?
Probably not. On that. A certain age, probably.
Well, no, believe it or not, you're not allowed to wear a suit of armour in the Houses of Parliament. Right. It is against the law. It is a statute passed in 1313 and is still on the books. Now, the Crown Prosecution Service have commented to say they've never had to prosecute anybody for wearing a suit of armour in the Houses of Parliament. But they did say if anybody entered the Houses of Parliament with a suit of armour on, they think it'll probably be a matter for the police. Yes, now that's very interesting. Well, I'm going to pose another question now, which we will give you the answer to at the end of the show. Please call in this time, 0800 756 1111 or text 81333 starting with Kent. What are you not allowed to carry along a pavement in London? What are you not allowed to carry along a pavement in London? Any ideas, guests?
A raccoon?
Yeah, that's probably not particularly safe to carry anywhere, I wouldn't have thought. Well, ponder on that, everybody, and give me a call. So, Mary, Nigel, we've been discussing mediation. What happens at the end of the process? So that they've been in mediation with you. Where do they go?
So let's be optimistic. If everything's been sorted in a way that feels fair to them, which is important, and in a way that would fall within the parameters of what a court would feel is fair, because most clients actually, mediation is not legally binding, and most people actually want to make it legally binding, and they would take the memorandum, it's called a memorandum, from the mediation to their lawyer to turn into something called a court consent order to make that a legally binding, enforceable
So you would
document.
Need solicitor involvement at that stage to help you drop that order?
Yes, you would usually. I mean, in theory you don't, but most people would find they'd need a lawyer to do that part of the process based on the memorandum that's produced from the mediation.
So Mary, if it's a child-based one, what would you be be looking to come out with from a child-based mediation? Would you go to court after that for an order? Or?
So hopefully you could come up with a number of different options. One of them would be a parenting agreement where you set out in one document what your plans were, what your arrangements are, and what your expectations are. And they're really good for avoiding future difficulties. So, for example, you might want to provide for introducing a new partner to your children, that sort of thing, which can cause a lot of tension. And you can provide for that in an agreement. But obviously, the most common example would be the time spent with each of the parents.
So have you had issues relating to your children? Have you been to mediation about that? If you'd like to share with us your story, please give me a call. 0800 756 1111. You're listening to On the Air with Graham Jones on BBC Radio Kent. And now the weather with Jan Bartram.
Hello there. Thursday gets off to a bright and sunny start. And
Resolution. Good evening, Jonathan.
Good evening, Graham.
So who are you and what is Resolution?
Well, my name is Jonathan Miller. I'm a solicitor and I've been practicing family law for around 18 years. In terms of what Resolution is an organisation. It was formerly known as the Solicitors Family Law Association, or SFLA for short, because all lawyers love an acronym. And it's around about 6,500 members. They are family lawyers and other professionals in England and Wales who believe in a constructive and non-confrontational approach to family law matters. Resolution also campaigns on improvements to the family justice system, and it's also responsible for training mediators and also collaborative lawyers.
So is there a degree of quality control? Can anybody just rock up and join Resolution?
No, it's not that straightforward. There is a code which underlines effectively everything that Resolution does, code of practice.
So what does the code say? Why is that going to be important to a client looking for a family lawyer?
Well, the code is, so it's the cornerstone of everything Resolution does, and it requires members to run their cases in a way to reduce and manage conflict and confrontation, for instance, not using inflammatory language. It's to encourage their clients to see beyond their immediate problems and look more longer term, and trying to come up with solutions that are in the best interests of the whole family, including any children.
Well, we're joined by Katie. Good evening, Katie.
Hello there, hi.
I understand you have a story about mediation that you'd like to share with us, and I'm sure Nigel and Mary will comment on this, and Jonathan can help as well. So what's your situation?
Well, I actually, first of all, contacted the show with a question for them. And then obviously your producer rang me and said, would you be prepared to come on? So
thank you very much for coming on.
My question for them was, how difficult is it to remain impartial?
Oh, that's a very good question. So who would like to tackle that one?
Good evening, Katie. Thank you very much for calling in. That is a really interesting question. So part of the sort of cornerstone, that's a term that Jonathan's already used, for mediation, is that the mediator must be impartial throughout the process. And I think that's about being professional, because sometimes you are dealing with situations where you might have your own sort of view, or you might have a view as to what you think the court's view of a particular case might be. But it's really important you don't impose that on the clients. It's their process. If they're going to do something that perhaps you feel as an individual may not be very sensible, what you obviously have to do is try and talk it through with them and check that that is what they want to do. But I do believe it's possible to remain impartial, and it's just part of being professional. But it's difficult sometimes, and it is challenging.
So, Katie, are you asking that question because you have some experience of it?
I was just going to ask you the same question.
unfortunately, yes.
I'm sorry to hear that.
It was quite a long time ago now, but I did enter into mediation with my ex-partner about our daughter. And unfortunately, I found that we didn't have an impartial mediator. And
I'm very, very sorry to hear that.
It was a really, really horrible experience.
And I think what's really important with that sort of situation, sorry to interrupt you, Katie, is that,
okay.
I mean, it's interesting to know what, because mediation is voluntary and it really needs to be working for you. And if it's not working, I mean, you would always hope the mediator would pick up on body language or pick up with the clients and say, are you okay with this? Or is there something we need to discuss? Mm. It sounds as though you didn't feel able to have that discussion.
Did you ever mention that to the mediator? Because one of the things I will say to them, if you feel I'm not being impartial, do say.
Mm. I think, I mean, certainly I felt extremely uncomfortable. A very brief summary is that I had been a victim of psychological abuse at the hands of this person. And, you know, he had certain ways of manipulating situations. And we had a couple of meetings where we were both in the room together with the mediator. And then I started to find it extremely stressful because he was doing what he had been doing before.
I asked
if we could actually continue, but in separate rooms. And I was really made to feel as if I was really, you know, ruining the process, and it was all my fault. And she didn't actually at all seem to understand how difficult I was finding it.
That's very sad, Katie. Mary, you wanted to say something.
We're
on that
all
point.
Sitting here cringing, Katie. I'm so sorry for
I'm
you
really
for going
sorry
through
to
that
have to
experience.
Ring in with a negative story, because I'd really love to have rung in with a really positive story about
it. No, that's it's important because there are a lot of mediators around, and as with any discipline, some people are going to be good, some people are going to be not so good. I have to say, probably we have two of the best mediators in the county sitting in the studio tonight, so they're very good for you to speak to.
I have to say, it does sound like you both are excellent from what I've heard on my journey. It's been lovely, my journey back from London, listening to you on the radio.
Thank you, Katie. I mean, I just wonder whether... I mean, obviously, you had high hopes for this process, and I think what we would have done is the first meeting we have with you is a screening meeting and an intake meeting and a check that, you know, what are the difficulties going to be? And was this really a suitable situation for mediation in the first place? Because from what you've described, there was immediately an imbalance of power between the two of you with this psychological issues that you were raising. And that should have put any mediator on their guard that this was going to be a potential issue for you. Mm. And so even a more heightened sensitivity for managing the process for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So disappointing.
I would have liked to be able to have a different mediator, but I can't remember why, but for some reason that was not an option at the time. It was actually CASCAS, the Court and Family, whatever that acronym is, they were the ones that had suggested mediation because my ex-partner wanted to go straight to court because he was trained as a solicitor. He loved the court and he loved the argument.
Well,
I think confrontational.
Thank you very much indeed for calling, Katie. I'm very sorry to hear you had a bad experience. Thank you for sharing with us. And if you ever need mediation again, by all means, do try and contact Nigel or Mary. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Katie.
Well, that was interesting, isn't it? And it's nice to hear that things aren't straightforward. And it's a very good example because you were saying you have to be impartial, but I'm sure you will sit there. Clients come in and they're talking around a subject and your lawyer brain is saying, well, really, I know where this should go. But you can't say that, can you? You have to let them manage the process and find their solution.
You absolutely do. And there's something called what's called transformative mediation, because actually you want the clients to make all the decisions that they feel are going to work for them, for their futures, which is picking up on what Jonathan said. You know, it's the wider family in their the long-term future, not just the immediacy of things.
I take it, well, I know I am. So all of us are members of Resolution, aren't we? Yeah. And Jonathan, for your sins, you are chair of Kent Resolution. Do you have a crown and a cape and everything? Or?
Well, I kind of wished for a kind of Game of Thrones style coronation, but it didn't happen. The budget didn't stretch to it.
So you would recommend, I'm sure we'd all recommend, if anybody is looking for a mediator or for a good family lawyer, Resolution's a good place to start. How would they go about finding somebody?
The Resolution website has a very handy find a member tool page.
So what's the Resolution website?
It's www.resolution.org.uk. And simply from there, you can find a member and search by postcode, surname, town. It also enables you to search by particular specialisms. So if, for instance, your legal issue relates to children, you can find Resolution members that specialise in children work. Or if it's financial work, again, similarly, you can filter through members that way. There's also an accreditation scheme that Resolution runs as well. And those who have that accreditation have to show a particular experience in a particular area within family law to quite a high standard.
And so that accreditation, does that continue to last, or do they have to be re-accredited?
It has to be renewed every 3 years.
So I'm assuming it's lawyers, but it's mediators as well. Actually, Stan Mary, you're on one of the committees for resolution, is that correct?
I'm on two of the committees.
Oh, two of them. I do apologise. I do apologise.
Yes, I'm dispute resolution and I'm education.
So resolution would be a way to find a good mediator as well.
There's the resolution, absolutely. There's actually also something called the Family Mediation Council, who have a website, because, I mean, resolution, generally probably people from lawyer backgrounds. There are other mediators who may be from a therapeutic background or counsellor background who are not lawyers, and they, you know, also can be very capable and competent mediators as well.
That's right. But resolution registered mediators tend to have a certain standard that has been checked, and they have to complete continuing education and demonstrate that for their application, their initial application, their renewal. So with resolution, we do know that there is a certain standard that has to be attained to be able to be registered with the resolution website.
So if you find a resolution-based mediator, can you be fairly certain that that mediator is also a lawyer?
It is likely that that mediator will be a lawyer, but it's not 100%, because there are other members of resolution who practice in other fields, yes, as Nigel was saying, therapists, counsellors.
And it's not a prerequisite to be a mediator that you must be a lawyer. I mean, as a mediator, you're essentially a facilitator. You are helping people resolve their difficulties. It helps as a lawyer that you know the law and you can give lots of information. So
all three of you are lawyers. How do you keep your mediator hat on and stop the solicitor hat knocking it off?
I don't find that's a problem. I mean, I think the more you do, the more experience, I guess, you just have a feel for the process. And I don't particularly like going to court and coming back from court to the office and doing a mediation, because they do require different mindsets.
A little bit bamboo curtain, yes.
Absolutely.
There is a real privilege in mediation, in meeting both of the people involved in a situation,
yes,
in a dispute, which you just don't get as a lawyer, because as a lawyer, you only ever represent one person. You only get one side of the story. You only hear what they have to say. When you do mediation, you get to meet both people. You hear both sides of the story. And that's absolutely crucial to resolve the issues that need to be sorted out.
I suppose there must be a much greater degree of satisfaction knowing that you've helped both parties sort out their dispute.
I agree with that completely, Graham. I think that it's very valuable.
I think when it works, I think the feedback from mediation, obviously very solid, but Katie's very horrendous experience. I think clients generally feel if it worked for them, it's a very good process.
So, because Jonathan, I believe you're also a collaborative lawyer, so you have experience, but not in the mediation sphere, but working with both clients.
That's right. So I do have similar experiences to Mary and Nigel with collaborative work, where both lawyers and their clients sign up to an agreement where everyone agrees to discuss their issues in the format very similar to that Mary and Nigel have been working in. And
so why are you not a mediator as well? Any particular reason?
My firm is fairly well staffed with mediators.
You're not needed then?
I'm not needed, but I am one of the collaborative lawyers.
Yes, yeah, so yeah. And I hope you're all listening last week when Kirsty was discussing with Melanie Denbrinker, as I recall, the collaborative process. Where do you see the collaborative process and mediation fitting? Are they mutually exclusive? Do they help?
Not at all. You can bring a mediator into the collaborative process if you've got two lawyers who are doing a collaborative case and they feel that they need to have someone to facilitate a sticking point. They might have got to a bit of a crossroads. Then you can bring a mediator in. So we all fit in together. It all slots in with the jigsaw puzzle. Again, it's just a tailored process to make sure that people who are going through this situation get exactly what they need, get the process that they need.
And well, I think that's one of the things you would explain to clients at the MIAM meeting, that first meeting, is all the options and processes available to the clients, not just mediation. So it's quite important and often forgotten, I think.
Well, thank you so much, both. I can't believe time has caught up with us already. I mean, can I say a very big thank you to Mary, Nigel and Jonathan? Where can people contact you if they would like to use your services? Because mediation, clearly, it needs to be in every case.
So for me, I'm Advantage Mediation. Just Google me and you'll find me.
And I have a website just called familyresolution.co.uk.
And Jonathan, if anybody would like to find you?
I'm at Whitehead Monkton, Whitehead and again, Monkton. Google skills.
Well, finally, we need to go back to my is it legal question. And we have a caller. I think we can go to Mandy. Mandy, good evening.
Good evening, Graham.
So, you think you know what it's, and you're not allowed to carry along a pavement in London. Pray tell.
I think I might do.
Go on, fire away.
I think it might be a plank of wood.
Well, almost correct. It's a plank of wood, a cask, a hoop, a tub, a wheel, a ladder, a pole or a placard. Section 34 of the Metropolitan Police Act 1839. It's to prevent public nuisance, but you can do it if you are carrying it from a vehicle. In addition, you're not allowed to fly kites, slide upon ice or snow. Thank you very much indeed for calling in, Mandy.
That's all right. You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for joining me on the show tonight. I hope that you've learnt something. Please feel free to call in on any of the shows you'll hear. I will say a big thank you again to my guests. That's Jonathan, Nigel,
thank you,
and Mary.
Thank you.
It's been a very interesting show. Thank you for my callers. I'd thank the team out there, Andy and Casey, you've guided me through a very traumatic evening. When I turned up tonight, I was told there was technical difficulties. That is not something you really want to hear on your